Good evening, Rabbi. Tonight's daf is daf Nun Ches. Let's start with a little bit of a review of the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Beis. I think we got to the bottom, no?
Yes.
So we had a machlokes of Yerkin and Rish Lakish. If someone stole from his maternal grandfather, who was a Kohen, he stole Truma. Then the maternal grandfather passes away and the Goslin inherits his grandfather. And then he eats the Truma B'shogeg. So we had a machloikas. Does he have to pay out the Shevet? That's a Biarkanon's position. Or can he keep it for himself? That's a Shlokish's position.
Is he a Kohen?
No. Absolutely not.
His mother is a Kohenis,
but it doesn't do him any good. he can't eat Truma. If he eats a Peshogi, he's kind of Karen
B'chaymesh. So what's the question? Whether he should just sell it?
The question is that...
Back to himself.
The question is that since he owns the guf, the mominous chalik of the Truma that he inherited from his grandfather... So therefore, if he eats a peshoke, he doesn't have to pay that out to the shevet because he owns it. Is my chiyuv to pay it out to the shevet simply a monetary requirement? If that's the case, Rish Lakish Tainis, there's no reason for him to pay out. He inherited it. It was his mama to begin with.
What happens when you inherit gezeila?
If my father was a Goslin and I inherited his gezeila, is that what you're asking me?
He stole it, right?
He stole it. But so what he inherited was, he inherited that which the grandfather owned, which is this gezeila.
Right.
He owns it.
He owns what he stole.
The grandfather, it's confusing. Let's not use he.
The grandson owns what he stole
after the grandfather passes away, because he inherited it. Before he died, he didn't own it.
No, but he stole it while the grandfather was alive.
But that doesn't make him own it. He doesn't own it at that point. At that point, he has a chiyuv hashavah to the grandfather.
Maybe it was
Mishyayish. No, let's not make up maybes. Let's not make up maybes for now. Let's assume for now that he came into the ownership through the Yerusha. Okay? I don't know if it'll make a difference for our discussion. I haven't worked all those details out. I mean, maybe... You can work it out and come again, and we can talk about it. But okay, so that's what's going on over here. So we have a machlokas, whether he pays himself, right, or does he have to pay the shevet? Yeah.
Right.
Now let's go to Nochas someone else now. Okay. Amar Reb Yoina. So Reb Yoina said the following: Kachay Meishav Reb Shimon Lachish LeRebbe. Le Reb Yechonon. I'm sorry, Reb Yechonon. That's why I don't like reading about this English. You don't read it right. This is what Reb Rish Lakish said to Reb Yechonon. Al daitoch de tamer mishalem la shevet. According to your opinion that you pay the shevet, hataninan, we have a mishnah. Now this mishnah is actually the next mishnah on daf. It's halacha beis. It's on daf. The part of the mishnah we're quoting is on nuntes on the beis. If you want to turn to it, you can just see that. I want you to see the context of the Mishnah. So do me a favor, turn to Nuntes on the base.
Base Nuntes?
Nuntes on the base. I don't know what else I could be referring to, if not
Perek.
Perek Nuntes? On the base?
Okay.
So now the Mishnah says, Mishnah Dalet, Hagoinev Truma...
59b1,
okay? Hagoinev truma v'lo ochla. Shall make kefil d'mei truma. Right? If I steal truma and I didn't eat it, so I'm a ganef, if I have to pay kefil, how much do you pay?
Kefil.
What happened to my oilam here? My oilam, I lost your achmiel, but there was somebody else on there. Tzvi was also on there. He also left. Oh, so you pay kefil to make truma, okay? Ochla, if you ate it, b'shogeg, or sham shnei kronim, you have to pay two kronim, right? You have to pay Karen for the Kefal, and you have to pay a Karen for the Achilas Truma that you did B'Shogeg, right? So, Karen B'Chaimash Menachulin, the Karen to make Truma, right? That's simple. Now, this is the case that Agamemnon is about to quote. Gonav Truma's Hektish. Let's suppose the Kohen got Truma, and then the Kohen decided, I'm going to make this Hektish Leben HaKabayis. And I stole that Truma. I mean, it doesn't matter where I stole it from. I stole it from the Kohen's house or from Hektish's Rishos. Makes no difference. For Ochla, and then I ate it. Shalom Shnei Chum Shen. I have to pay. I'm not a Kohen. I'm a Yisrael. I have to pay Shnei Chum Shen. I have to pay 2/5, right? Because it was Hektish. And someone who's Moel Behektish pays 1/5. And it's Truma. Someone who eats Truma B'Shogeg pays 1/5. So there's 2/5. It's very simple, right? So Gonav, Truma's Hektish, Shalom Shnei Chumshin, the Karen. And he's only have to pay back a Karen because obviously Ain Kefal to Hektish. Because it says, L'Rei Ehu by the Parsha of Kefal, it doesn't, Rei Ehu V'Loi Hektish. So this is a very simple Mishnah. It's possible to have 2 chumshin, one for the Me'ilah, one for the Truma, and you pay Hektish the Karen. That's what it says. So now, let's go back to our page now here. We're about to, so I just want you to see the context of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about a Ganef, and it's trying to discuss Kefal, for which is to a Kohen, versus when you steal it from Hektish, where it's no, there's no Kefal. The Mishnah is pretty much trying to discuss the Karen part of it, and also machadish to us the fact that it's possible to have two fifths. Now, the reason I have a reason for speaking this all out. So now, so Rish Lakish asked Rabbi Yochanan, according to you who hold that you pay the shevet for hotzino, and the Mishnah says later on, God of Trumasak to Shrachol, Mashal Shechosh of the Karen, and he pays 2/5 in the Karen, the Yeshalem Shlosha. According to Rabbi Yochanan, I have another case. I have another fifth. The Mishnah said, the way the Mefarshim explained the Gemara's Kasha is that, like we see in other places in Shas, where there are Mishnayos that try to rack up doing one Maisa and being high of many different, like Yesh, Chayrish, Taylam, Echad, V'chayiv, Chamish, Alam, right? You kind of for Klayim and whatever. Sherets. Whatever. There's all kinds of things it tries to rack up. So over here, the same way it racked up 2/5, there could have been a 1/3. There are 3 places in the Torah where fifths mentioned. One is Truma. 2 is what? Is right, by Gazal V'Nishba, right? Shekher, they pay a 1/5. And what and the third one is Mael Behektish, right? Truma, Mael Behektish. And the third one is a person steals and swears falsely, he pays also 1/5. So, according to... he's saying, I never stole it. Or in this case, he's swearing to Hektish, let's say.
He swears in Beijing.
The 2/5 has to be involved Hektish.
The Kohanim. He says, in the English at the top, it says, the thief swore falsely to the Kohanim and later admitted his guilt. He should be liable to pay a total of 3/5.
So the Kohanim are representing Hektish here?
I guess so. Yeah. See, that's the fallacy. There's a certain fallacy in this question. There's an assumption being made in this Gemara. He's swearing to the Kohen. The Kohen already made it Hektish. So I don't know where the Gemara comes to make that assumption. I really don't understand that. But he's assuming. So let's just get the question here, right? So make sure we understand why this is a kasha on Rabbi Yochanan and not on Rish Lakish. That's what you have to understand. What is it about what Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish? Again, Rabbi Yochanan said he's mashalim to the Shevet. If you stole it from Imo Yisrael, he pays to the Shevet. According to Rish Lakish, he keeps it himself. So, according to your Rabbi Yochanan, I have another Chomesh I could have brought along. And that is, he stole it, swore falsely to the Kohanim and should have to pay another chumash. Bishloima lididi, we have to speak it out. Bishloima lididi, according to Rish Lakish, let's look at it in the second paragraph on footnote 4, where he explains why, like Rish Lakish, it's not a kasha. Following the view of Rish Lakish, however, there is no difficulty at all for justice. Rish Lakish holds a non-Kohen who stole Truma and inherited it need not return it to the Kohanim. So he would similarly hold that once Truma was made hektish, the Kohanim no longer have any claim to it, so that if it is stolen, hektish will be the sole claimant. So one who steals Truma of hektish could never become obligated to pay an additional one-fifth on account of swearing falsely, since the laws pertaining to oaths do not apply to cases involving hektish. So the din of Gzela, of Nishba, what is it? I don't know what the terminology is. Is there a term for this? Nishba? Sheker? Not Shua Sheker. That's the wrong term. I forget what it's called. Shua's Habikotten. What is this called? I can't remember. Is Shua's Gzela? I mean, all right. We'll call it Shua's Gzela for now, lack of a better term. So that doesn't apply by Hektish. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, right, according to Rabbi Yochanan's view in the previous paragraph, that he still must return it to a Kohen, so then the Kohanim can be considered, in parentheses writes, in a certain sense, see, this is a nuance, in a certain sense, the Kohanim still have access to the Karen, because if I ate it b'shogeg, I'm going to have to, after all, pay it to the Shevet HaKohuna. So therefore, they are, in a sense, a bialim. So therefore, if I swear, it should become a chiyuv for me to pay the extra fifth. That's his question. Okay? It's a very difficult read. First of all, like I just showed you the Mishnah. To make an assumption that that Mishnah is trying to rack up as many fifths as we could possibly come up to is not at all what that Mishnah is talking about. That's not a Mishnah of Yesh Chayrish, Telem Echad V'chayiv V'chamisha Chatos. That's not the kind of Mishnah it is. On a Mishnah that says, oh, I have a case here where I can be chayiv 5 Chatos, you can ask a Kasha, oh, I have a case where you can be chayiv 6 Chatos. And you can ask a Kasha on the Mishnah why it didn't reckon it. But that Mishnah is talking about what does a Kohen pay if he's a Ganef? Who does he pay Kefil to? When did he not pay Kefil? If he ate a Peshogeg, does he pay to Chomshin, and where does it come out of? It's totally not trying to figure out a case where you have many Chomshin. So the whole premise of such a question is very weak, and in fact, the Gra completely wipes out this pshat completely. It has a totally different mahalach, and I'm not going to give it to you now. But I just want you to know that it's a shver gemar. It's a very shver gemar. So what's the answer of the Gemara? The answer is Rabbi Yassir b'Shem Rabbi Yochanan HaTorah Omo Yotzei Bo Yidei Gezeilo, that the Torah says once you pay the principal plus a fifth, you yotzei any obligation from the theft. So in other words, with the one fifth, you'd be yotzei the Ashuas Gezeila as well, because you yotzei with the one payment. That's basically what it's saying. You told us over two halachas from Rabbi Yochanan. We're going to say the second halacha soon, but the first halacha we just said, and you didn't give us any marker for it. Where does he know this from? You said you yotze the gzela with just one payment. How do you know that? So he answers, once you pay it off, you were yotzei, you did whatever it was, you were chayav as the gzela, you're yotzei. And that's it. Right? By specifying that one who consumed the truma must pay the holy HaKodesh, it conveys that the fifth of the truma payment is sufficient on its own. Another fifth need not be paid, even in a case where the person has stolen the truma and swore falsely in denial of his liability, and it's ultimately confessed. Right? In other words, that fifth, you yotze both fifths. One fifth, you yotze both fifths. Question is, why is it? It's not adequate enough, obviously, to be yotze the fifth for the mi'ilah. And that's what he says Why is that fifth also not covered? I don't know what the reason for that is, but that's what basically he's saying here. And what's the other halacha? It's talking about totally out of topic here. Talking about paraduma. Whenever we're talking about something, we could always throw in a halacha about paraduma. I find that seems to be like a favorite topic. Let's talk about paraduma. I mean, it's been about 5-6 blots since we talked about paraduma. Okay, so you told us another halacha from Rabbi Yochanan. What? That the place that you shecht the paraduma. Remember, where do you shecht the paraduma?
Outside
on whatever it's called, Hamishka. What's it called? The mountain that faces the Har Bais. So was it
Har Tofim?
Har Tofim. So that's where you used to shecht the carbon. That place where you shecht it, that Mokom Shchitasa Sham Teisrifasa. That's where you burn the para, which of course produces that very very valuable ash, which we all need to become tahar from tumas. Hamais, right? Very important. Where does Rabbi Yochanan know that halacha from? Maybe you can shecht it by one place and then move the animal to another place and burn it over there. How do you know you have to use the makom hashchita? Well, has a very interesting drush over here. Rabbi Elazar b'shem Rabbi Yishai al pirsha yisrof, which literally means by its waste. You'll burn the cow, its hide, its flesh, its blood, with its waste. Al pirsha, with its waste, you shall burn it. The Gemara says, Ma'atram, how do you see it from that pasuk? The Gemara explains, Makom prishasim echayim. We make a drasha that pirsha means the place that it left life, where it lost its life, which is the Makom Hashchita. It's pirsha echayim. It died there. That spot where the paraduma died. That's where you should have the Sreifa.
That's a play on
the word Pirsha. That's a play on the word Pirsha. Shom Tehisri Fasa. So that's a very interesting halacha. That's a separate drasha for the second halacha of Rabbi Yochanan, right? So we have two halachas from Rabbi Yochanan with the makar from the Pesukim. Next, Rabbi Yochanan Karebi. Now remember, let's just review again what we said before on previous page. We had a machlokes Rebbe and Rav Elazar Rebbe Shimon. What was the machlokes? Who can tell me the machlokes Rebbe and Rav Elazar Rebbe Shimon? A regal achas. Who has two regal? Who two raglayim? How about three raglayim? without embarrassing anyone. So it says that when does truma become completely kaidash? If I designate, I ate a peshogeg. I have to pay back kulin. To pay off my truma, right? Is it become completely kodesh when I separate it? That's what Rav Shimon's shita. Or according to Rebbe, it's only partially kodesh. But again, what halacha is it kodesh according to Rebbe? Kodesh. How is it kodesh? It's negeh kodesh only, but again, that's the iser for the czar to eat it, right? But as far as if he eats it in shogeg, or the Gabi Tumma, it does not have full dini hekdesh until when? Until you give it nasina lekohen is what nasinasa lekohen mekantroso. That was the drasha we said with Shem Rebbe. That was yesterday's page. I know it's been a long time, but let's remember that machloikas Rebbe and Rabbi Elazar Rebbe Shimon. So now the Gemara wants to shteltzu Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish in their machlokas, which I'm not even going to ask you what that machlokas is, whether you have to give it to the Shevet or whether you can keep it yourself, right? Is that the question? So we're going to try to say,
by separating it out, you're giving it and you're just claiming it, in essence.
Oh, so Rabbi Yochanan Karebi, Rabbi Yochanan, who says what? That the payment produce in general does not become fully sanctified as truma until it's given to a Kohen. So Rabbi Yochanan, similarly, what's he saying? You have to give the payment to a Kohen to satisfy his obligation to replace the truma that he ate. That seems to go in line. In other words, there's this obligation. Because he ate a peshogeg, he has this obligation to make sure that it becomes fully kodesh. How will it become fully kodesh? By giving it to a Kohen. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's shita. Whereas Rish Lakish will hold like Rabbi Elazar Rebbe Shimon. Rish Lakish holds you keep it, because after all, when you separate it out, you've already, when you yotze your din, to make to replace that which you ate with chulin, right? Amar Rabun Bar Chiya, v'nizbar Reb Shimon ben Lakish k'Rebbe, and if Reish Lakish wanted to, he could even hold like Rebbe. Means that he could still rule, I read the English inside, he could still rule the thief who ate the truma merely designates the payment and keeps it for himself. For it's possible, when Rebbe said his shita, that what? That the payment doesn't become fully credit until you give it to the coin. That was when? Rebbe was talking about where you have an obligation to give it to the coin, meaning that there was a fee of mammon to give it away. That's where Rebbe says that it's not kedush until you give it to the coin. But where you did not have an obligation to give it to another coin because you own it because you inherited it, which is Reish Lakish's shita, so then even Rebbe would agree in that case that the hafar shasai mikan shasai, that that's adequate, that's enough. That, okay. So this is Rabun Bachir's Svara, that it's not necessarily, you don't have to necessarily put Reish Lakish in Reb Lazar Reb Shimon's camp. You could even put Reish Lakish Shita in Rebbe's camp. And he gives you this Svara, right? Is that clear? So now the Gemara says, proof for this kind of thinking. Dehi Masnisa. That's analogous to this Mishnah. Here we have, let's go over the rule. The rule is, right? Right? That famous parsha, which is in your tefillin. Right? One of the parshas of the tefillin is the parsha of Pinyin Petach Hamar, which is, you have a Hamar, has a firstborn donkey. It's Kodesh, unless... You have two options. One is to be poded with a seh, or to break its neck. Now let's talk about the pinyon So you put it with a seh. So what do? I take my seh, I'm poded it, and I say zeh tacha zeh, whatever the lashon is over there. And then what do I have to do? I got to give it to the coin. What happens if it drops dead before I get a chance to give it to the Kohen, right? Right, so is it my responsibility? Am I responsible? So that's what the Mishnah brings to Machlokes.
It's not about responsibility, it's a question of how do you get off the hook? What do you have to do to get off the hook yourself?
I already got off the hook because I designated the Seh, Zeh Taka Zeh, and I'm off the hook with just, that's a possibility, right? Okay. Or is an asina to the coin necessary? So here it says, it's a machlokas tanoim. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Chayav Bar Chiya. So we're on 58b, I forgot to say. On 58b at the bottom now.
So what the idea, the Hamor or the Seh?
The Seh. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Chayav Bar Chiya. So you can come and shalom shalbain. Just like if you have pinyin habain. Person has a firstborn son. And then he goes ahead and he designates five shalom to do pinyin habain. Right, so he has his five silver coins, and then he loses them. He says zeh tacha zeh before he gets a chance to give it to the coin. You know, it's very easy. It's a very, very tempting little item. It's nice shiny silver coins, and someone took them out of the envelope before the coin got a chance to get it. So is he obligated to give the coin another five shalom? Obviously he is, because the pinyan is giving. That's no question. There the pinyan is giving the Kohen the money and you're part of your son. If you lose the money, it doesn't matter that you designated it, it doesn't make a difference, right? So Reb Lazar says the same thing with the Seh. If the Seh dies before you give it to the Kohen, it's like Chamish Shloim Shoben. That's your obligation. Chachamim and the Ham disagree. They say, it's like Pinyan Maaser Sheni. If I have Maaser Sheni, I'm outside of Yerushalayim and I'm paid the Maaser Sheni on Kesef. And on my way to Yerushalayim, I lose the kesef. I get pickpocketed in one of the bus stations, right? And I lose the money. What's the rule? Nothing. That's it. I'm off the hook. I can eat my Maaser Sheni Peiros. They were nifta already on that kesef. And the Ganav fell a tail the rush of Yomus. Let him drop dead when he eats my stolen money, right? That's could be your attitude.
So the swine that I designate for Pinyan Ben, do they have any level of hectic?
No.
So then what's the connection here? I
It means that it has to reach the Kohen's hand. You're right.
With the Keter Chamor, I have to do something to fix it. With the slime, for the slime, I can fix it.
Very good. So all they're just saying the halacha is the same. They're not learning it from there. You're right. You're absolutely right. It's completely different.
Or a one-step process. That's what,
right.
Is it two
right.
steps to get there, or one step?
Correct. Correct.
Well, I would obviously think that I have to replace the I have to eventually give it to the Kohen.
So you don't agree with the Chachamim, basically. You feel the Chachamim are wrong.
I'm not a Chacham, so it's
okay. I hear.
I hear
what you're saying. Okay, so we have a machlokes of Eliezer who holds your chayiv in the achrayus if the said dies, and the chacham say you're not chayiv in the achrayus if the said dies. The chacham hold this like pinyan ma'aser sheni. Once you do it, you've done it. So you hold like the chachamim. You hold like the chachamim. Okay, here. So what the Gemara is trying to say here is the positions. Look in the next paragraph here in the English, on 58b2, second paragraph. The positions in this dispute are similar to the dispute between Rabbi and Elazar ben Shimon. Right? Again, Rabbi held that it's partially hektish when you designate it, but not until you give it, you completely yotze. So who's that like? That's like Rabbi Eliezer, right? Rabbi Eliezer who held that you're chayav in the achrayus until you give the set. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon who holds that as soon as you set it aside, it becomes completely hektish. That's similar to the Chachamim. That's the Gemara. So now, the Gemara now will conclude the proof by citing a brisa that qualifies Rabbi Eliezer's opinion in the above cited Mishnah. Moida Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer is Moida. Now we have the following case. Pitre Chamoros Shenoflu Lo Mibes Avi Imo Kohen. This is a little bit of a complicated case. If you want to take a look at the, I want to take a look at the Marufulda in the Hebrew. You see, it's in the middle of the paragraph where the lines get wide. It says, Umayri, we're talking about a case, Sha'oso Avi Imo Kohen, that his maternal grandfather, who was a Kohen, Yorshon Gamkein, he also inherited them, may Avi Imo Yisrael, from his maternal grandfather, who was a Yisrael. So you got it? So we've got six generations here. You have Avi Imo Yisrael had a petach, had a chamor, who he was what? Right? He had a petach chamor. And his grandson, who was a Kohen, right? His daughter married a Kohen. They had a son, and so he inherited from his grandfather, who was in Yisrael, right? Shekranaschayvi bepidyon bebeis Yisrael rishon. So those petach chamor, those firstborn of a chamor, were chayiv to have a pidyon already in the original great 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 grandfather, right? The ilu padon haKohen. If the grandson of the first, of the highest, right, at the middle tier, if that Kohen would have been po to them, hakol shalom, he would have kept everything for himself, right? It's his own petach hamor. Let me make this clear. The reason why we're making it complicated like this is because if a Kohen owns a chamor and it has a firstborn donkey, there's no chiyuv. Just like if a Kohen has a firstborn son, he's not chayiv in pinyon haben. He's also not chayiv in pinyon petach hamor either. So we had to create a case where he inherited a petach hamor which had a chiyuv pinyon on the petach hamor. So the chiyuv pinyon happened to his grandfather, who was Yisrael. That now came down b'chiyuvo to him b'yerusha. Now, if he were to go ahead and execute a pinyon petach hamor with a seh, he would have kept a seh for himself, because he's a Kohen. So he doesn't have to give it to another Kohen, right? That's what he's saying. Ilu padon ha-Kohen ha-Kol Shalom. Ha-Chinami, now we're going to go to the bottom generation. His grandson, in turn, who's a Yisrael, is inheriting the Petach Hamor from his grandfather, who's a Kohen, right? It originated at the great-great-grandfather who was a Yisrael. It went to his grandfather who was a Kohen. Now it's down to the grandson who is a Yisrael, right? So it's Yisrael, Kohen, Yisrael. So, ha-yoresh po-da-osan v'hein shalom. So this is the Kiddush over here. This Yisrael, he's inheriting the zuchuyot that his grandfather had in this mamon. The Kohen had a schus that if he were to be poda that peter, he could have kept that seh for himself. Therefore, his grandson, in turn, also inherits this schus that if he does the pinyon, then it also belongs to him. That's what it says over here. I think that's what I'm teaching right.
The English in 15 says it's just three generations.
Yeah, why do you need six generations? You can just go regular.
I just explained to you why it has to be six generations.
The English says you don't need it.
Shuldik, the English does not disagree with what I just said. If you look very carefully, if you look very carefully in number 15, the Kohen grandfather, read it carefully, had inherited the firstborn donkeys from his maternal grandfather who was not a Kohen. You got it? He inherited it from his grandfather. That's what I was telling you. There's all the way up. You have to start with someone who was a Yisrael, who started with the Petach Hamor. His grandson, who was a Kohen, inherited it, right? And in whose domain the donkeys became subject to redemption, because, he puts in brackets, the offspring of donkeys owned by a Kohen himself would be completely exempt, right? Then, after the brackets, he says, had the Kohen grandfather redeemed these donkeys, he would have been allowed to keep the redemption for himself. Therefore, his non-Kohen grandson who inherited the donkeys may likewise keep the animals he uses to redeem them. That's what it says over here.
That's five generations.
What's that?
Five generations.
One, two, three, four, five. No, you're right. It's five generations.
A side hustle.
Yeah, okay. Five generations. Correct. Now, so let's try to understand. So we're coming to the punchline now. So let's see, how are we doing on time? It's already 9:05. So let's say the pshat over here. So how does this end? So, mikivin shehifrisho. So now, here, let's take, what's Rabbi Lazar saying? Rabbi Lazar, who normally says what? I'm sorry. Rabbi Lazar, from the previous brisa, where we said that if you have a seh, and you set it aside, and it died before you gave it to the Kohen, you have to replace it, Yochai B'Achrayas, he's Moda in this case. As soon as this Yisrael sets aside the Seh for the pinyon of Petach Hamor, because of this, the nature of this case, that he inherited that right from his grandfather Kohen, Kircho, it's Kaddish, and if it dies, he's not obligated to replace it, because it immediately became fully Kodesh. So in that way, by the same token, here's where we come to the bottom line here. So the English at the top, by the same token, you could assume that Rebbe would also agree that if you ate truma that you inherited, the produce that he uses for payment attains full truma sanctity as soon as it's separated, fulfilling the obligation. And that's Rabun Bar Chiya's explanation of Rish Lakish. That, in other words, Rabun said that Rish Lakish could also hold like Rebbe, because when does Rebbe say that it doesn't attain full kedushas until you give it to the Kohen, if you have an obligation to give it to the Kohen? But if you don't have an obligation to give it to the Kohen, then it attains full kedusha immediately. And therefore, Rish Lakish, who holds you could hold it, also could hold like Rebbe. And here we see the same idea here with Rabbi Lazar being moida, that if you took the seh and you set it aside, and if you were in this situation where you inherited it from your grandfather who was a Kohen, who inherited it from his grandfather who was in Israel, that it would be kosher immediately. Ad kan. It's easy. So, Moitzi Shabbos, Mitzvah Hashem.
8:30.
Abi Gazunt.